Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.
Joining me now is a very special guest, Dr. Stephanie Warboys. She works for the Maxim Institute, and amongst other things, she's written a research paper of late called Shaky Foundations, Why Our Democracy Needs Trust. And this is a really important piece of research, I would argue, as she explores the declining trust in New Zealand's parliamentary and democratic systems, and she also proposes some suggestions. So I wanted to bring her on the show today to tell us more about this and have a little bit of a banter. And I think, amongst other things, it'll be interesting, myself being a former member of parliament, and obviously Stephanie bringing that more objective academic view. So Stephanie, if I might call you that, or Dr. Warboys, welcome along.
Thank you. It's great to have me, and Stephanie is fine.
Oh, thank you. I was looking at your bio, as one does, and I noticed you studied at Bethel University in Minnesota, and was just saying to you before we came on air that my wife, even though she's Kiwi, used to live in Minnesota in a place called Stillwater, just down from you.
Stillwater is beautiful. She was very lucky to live there.
Oh, it's stunning. I went over there last year. Rachel wanted to show me where she had lived, and just amazing. It's hard to explain to people, but think of this beautiful river, more traditional bridges over it, wonderful cafes and restaurants, just an amazing place.
Yeah, I never lived there, but I would often visit. I would spend a day or two by the river reading just to enjoy the beautiful town. We don't have a lot of beautiful towns in Minnesota, but Stillwater is one of them.
Oh, I loved it. We also have friends at a place called, get this, guys, it's called White Bear Lake. Probably an unusual phrase to a Kiwi, but another amazing place. And as you'll know, Stephanie, they all have these pontoons, like flat-bottom boats, and people go out on them with big comfortable chairs and barbecues. It's amazing.
Yeah, I was actually just in White Bear a couple weeks ago having coffee with my sister. So, yeah, I love White Bear Lake.
It's a small world. Well, look, thank you for coming on board. And look, you've written this research paper. You call it Shaky Foundations, and it's particularly around the question of trust. So talk us through what you've discovered.
Well, I happened to notice recently that Kiwis didn't seem as trustful, especially trustful of their government, as they had been in the past. And as an outsider who moved to this country, I was always really impressed with how much trust they had in their government and in each other. There was a real sense of cooperation and community in New Zealand. And at first it was strange to me, but as I experienced it more, I really admired that. And so I started to notice that that just wasn't the case anymore. It seemed to me that there were less people who were engaging with the news, that there were more protests happening, and that there was a lot of anger on social media. And even my friends, who I didn't think really thought too much about those sorts of things, were really starting to express some discontent and some suspicion. So I decided I'll just have a look into the data and see if that supports, you know, what I'm experiencing in my day-to-day life in New Zealand. And I found that the data really did confirm that this is a problem in New Zealand, and a growing one. So I found that there was a marked decline in political trust and even in political engagement in New Zealand. Over the past 2 years, the Acumen Edelman Trust Barometer reported that trust in political leaders had fallen 10 percentage points in those 2 years, and trust in government had fallen by 9. Likewise, in 2023, there was a survey published by the Office of the Clerk, a parliamentary survey that surveys the New Zealand public on their attitudes and thoughts around parliament. And it found that the reputation score of parliament had fallen from 61.2 in 2020 to 53.4 in 2022. The same survey also found that engagement with parliament had hit a new low of only 13%. And a bigger concern to me was that only 60% of us down from 68%, thought that democratic processes were accessible to them. And only 36% believed that parliament was focused on dealing with issues that they cared about. So, yeah, the data really suggests that Kiwis feel disconnected from parliament and are not optimistic that their views and opinions have any sort of meaningful effect.
Look, that accords with my own experience having been in there. It's obviously anecdotal from my side, but I've seen even in the 12 years that I was there, just that slow change. And maybe it's a romantic view when I first got in there of the past, but a lot more people come into select committees, engaging, writing to a growing disillusionment. But for what it's worth, and I'd be really interested on what your research shows, I think, unfortunately, the last few years, COVID in particular, I'm not saying that's the one thing. I certainly am not a believer that one thing causes these types of changes, but COVID and the way it was managed certainly broke enormous trust in the parliament. I still have people today, Stephanie, who are upset about how myself and the wider parliament dealt with things, you know, changing information, do this one day, oh, now do this the next. But also a lot of the, I suppose, fundamental rights that were quickly eroded, and often through the use of urgency, Parliament just used its power. I mean, is that something?
Yeah.
Well, I've read your paper. By the way, everyone, it's only 20 pages. It's easy to read. It's a fantastic document. But you touch on the point of urgency has also been something which has undermined trust in the parliamentary system.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. There is no single cause, but urgency is certainly an important one among them. So like, as you know, but you know, for the audience, you know, urgency is when the normal rules are suspended and laws are pushed through with less scrutiny and time for debate, which reduces both the public's and the opposition's ability to influence the content of the legislation that's being put in place. So I had a look at the numbers before we came on air, and in the 2017 through 2020 parliamentary term, there were 65 out of 258 bills introduced by the government that used urgency in at least some part of their passage. That's about 26% of the legislation. In the 2020 through 2023 parliamentary term, there were 86 out of 233 bills introduced that used urgency. So again, that's 37% of the legislation. And so far in the current parliamentary term, there have been 78 government bills introduced by the government. 16 have been under urgency in at least part of their passage. So that's already 20%.
Oh, it's something that's been used, and really important for listeners to understand, I think. This goes across government, so again, it's not particularly a left-right issue, but it's something that's been used. I've certainly seen it more and more. I remember, Stefan, when I first started, it was really, well, one bill was around, there was an error in the Police Act, or the Crimes Act, around the oath, which police officers swear. And so this oath was being incorrectly made, which therefore invalidated the police officers. So if you or I, not that we would be, but if you or I had been arrested by one of these officers, they had sworn the wrong oath, which means they're no longer actually police officers, which means that you and I could go free. So that was an example where the parliament quietly agreed across parties to do this under urgency and late at night. And with no offence to defence lawyers, it was done so that no one could go rushing to the court to try and exploit this parliamentary fault. So there's, I would say, an example of urgency well used. But you're touching on so much more, and I saw it in my own time, both in government and then in opposition, more and more legislation just being rushed through. And you're dead right. The and it's twofold, if I might, and correct me on this, because there may be other elements, but one is not only are we not giving that scrutiny, but the public goes, why do I bother? They're just ramming this through. They don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care about my opinion.
Exactly. And we are seeing that in the data that people don't believe that their voice matters to Parliament. And that's a problem because urgency gives a rather autocratic flavor to the way that we govern here in New Zealand. And we're a democracy. We want to hear from the people and we want to enact what they think is right.
And I've always found when they do engage, again, having sat around select committees and chaired them for many years, you see often the trepidation for someone who comes in. I mean, Parliament can still be quite imposing, even though we try to be friendly. But often at the end of their 5 or 10 minutes, people are often quite relieved. A, it's been a better experience than they thought. But again, they've been able to share their view and they feel the better for it. But as we said near the start, a lot of people just aren't bothering now.
Yeah, I mean, one of the fundamental principles of democracy is that the everyday person should have a say in the decisions that affect their lives. And if they no longer believe that that say will count for anything, then of course they're going to withdraw from participation. And that creates apathy that might turn later into polarization, which could also lead to extremist politics and eventually the dissolving of a democracy. So it's not a road we want to be on.
Would you say, well, how alarmed should we be with that? Because I do see some of the warning signs. I mean, again, it's in your paper. We are seeing a tendency to go to the polar extremes. Doesn't matter if it's left or right. We are seeing more populist politics. I mean, is this something we should be obviously worried about or really worried about?
You know, I think it's hard to say. Kiwis, they kind of keep their thoughts to themselves. And so it's hard to know just how dissatisfied they are and just how distrustful they are. But I think it's really important to remember that when we lose trust in the democratic functioning of our system, that is very hard to restore. And so even if it's not bad now, it's going to become bad if we don't pay attention to it. And so the time to act is now, the time to take this problem seriously and to take some steps to work on it is now, because we don't want to wait until we are at each other's throats and we can't talk to each other. And when we are absolutely just disenchanted with our government and its leaders, we want to take care of our democracy now. It's a garden that needs constant tending.
I think it's actually a great analogy. In Shaky Foundations, in your research paper, you talked about of particular catalysts around this movement towards distrust amongst others, the management of COVID and Three Waters. Do you want to? Could you expand on both of those? Why you think they've been particularly damaging?
Well, I think with the COVID responses, there was a sense that our fundamental interests, the things that we rely on in order to be able to even participate meaningfully in our democracy, having a job, having our bodily autonomy, resting in the security of those things, was all of a sudden in doubt. And that can really shake a person up and they can withdraw from participation because participation becomes too dangerous. So I think those COVID responses have a lot to answer for. But with the Three Waters, that was unsignaled legislation and the majority of the population, they weren't interested. It wasn't something that they believed was important that they could get behind. And the government of the day wanted to press forward anyway with that. And that really did say to a lot of Kiwis, well, we're not actually here to represent you and your interests and to do what you want. We're here to, tick off our own list of things we want done. And that's going to make anyone put their hands up and say, well, what's my purpose here? What do I contribute? And why aren't you listening to me? This is how it's supposed to work.
One of the paradoxes on the Three Waters side, and then we'll touch on the COVID stuff, was it reinforces the importance of people's participation, because actually it was not parliamentarians who identified the issue with Three Waters, particularly trying to entrench a controversial element. So the government, and I'm not trying to play partisan politics here, but the government introduced its idea, as you say, trying to entrench a very unusual element of law. We've never done it before. And yet the parliament, the MPs, we didn't pick it up. It was actually someone in the public who, I think via Twitter of all things, rang the alarm bell. But I certainly agree that once it became public, boy, there was real concerns. And then certainly with COVID, I mean, I'm a student of philosophy, so this is going to drive everyone bonkers. But I've often said, you know, our human rights, our fundamental human rights exist not for the good times, but for the bad times. So freedom of association, exactly. Freedom of speech, bodily autonomy, as you mentioned, these are the good times. And I think that's unfortunately what happened during, as a broad statement, during COVID, was a lot of those rights got suspended or questioned. And again, I can understand why people got and are still very frustrated. So, I mean, what do you see as some of the solutions? How do we fix this? Apart from getting rid of me from Parliament, which was possibly a good step forward.
No comment. No, I would say one immediate action really does focus on that urgency piece. I think it would be very impactful for rebuilding trust to limit urgency to only those matters that are in fact urgent. So no government should have the power to circumvent the normal legislative process on any matter that it likes. Instead, it should really be reserved for things that we need to actually deal with right away. And so one way we could limit urgency would be to amend the standing orders and to require a supermajority, so like 2/3 of MPs, in order to accord urgency to a particular matter. And this would require a degree of bipartisanship, which would make it more likely that urgency is only used in those situations akin to a national crisis or that police oath that you mentioned earlier, which was a great example. And that would really cut down on the government of the day being allowed to make convenient laws that work for them.
Yeah, it's one I've been thinking about since I read your paper, because look, we overuse urgency, that's for sure. How to define it's going to be the question, or how to keep it, because speaking as a former politician, one of the things which can happen, and it's possibly a bit dramatic a word, but you can end up with a blackmail dynamic, as in if the government's completely dependent on a supermajority to move some legislation forward, oppositions, doesn't matter if they're red or blue, left or right, will say, oh, well, we'll only give you agreement. We'll only give you agreement if you do this. And this is what happens in that horse trading that we talk about in Parliament all the time. So I'm with you for the sake of a good discussion. I'm with you in the general concept. It's how to apply it, because it will get, if you will, a supermajority will get misused, I'm afraid to say, because we see this all the time in Parliament. Hey, if you help us move this bill through, then what will you do for us? So how to manage that trading. But you've also mentioned, and we'll have to bring you back for a wider discussion another time, but you've also mentioned setting up maybe looking at a second House of Parliament once again and entrenching the Bill of Rights. So those were two other suggestions coming out of your paper, weren't they?
Yeah, the paper didn't really have the space to go into the kind of detail about those suggestions. My main suggestion regarding those is that we actually, as a nation, need to have a broader discussion about how to improve our checks and balances, because they are lacking. And those other suggestions were options that we should put on the table for discussion. So I did mention that we could return to a bicameral system and have that other house. We could also increase the number of MPs, or like you say, entrench the Bill of Rights Act. Any one of those would improve the checks and balances and limit the power that the government can wield at any one moment. And even all of them would be effective in restoring some trust. But there really is a discussion that needs to be had. We as a people need to decide what we want to do. We've noticed that our government has kind of got a bit out of control. And we need to say to each other, well, how do we fix this? What works for us? And what are the drawbacks to those particular solutions? And so I think more study needs to be done, more arguments need to be had, more public discussion.
100%. I mean, the fundamental thing here, if I'm echoing what you've said, is it's our democracy. Democracy is the people's. It's not the parliaments, it's not the elected MPs of the day or the governments, it's the people's. And so, what are the mechanisms that we can use? Dr. Warboys, Stephanie, thank you for coming on and also for writing the paper. I encourage listeners to go to the Maxim Institute website. It's called Shaky Foundations, Why Our Democracy Needs Trust. As I said at the start, it's 20 pages. It's a wonderful, easy read, and perhaps that's one of the first steps that we can, if you will, communally take to engage this paper and your ideas. So, Stephanie, thanks for coming on. And again, I look forward to chatting another time as well.
Thanks, Simon.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.